public health and animals. And one of the things, Armando Hoyt with the College of Veterinary Medicine here at OSU. Well, yeah, this is OSU. What am I talking about? We're on the OSU correct. Campus right here.
Yes.
Armando has been out here before, but we wanted to bring him back a little bit and talk about some of the issues that we've been seeing related to infectious diseases and how we handle them on the farm in particular any animal environment, but certainly in our livestock environments. The kind of thing that we may think we're doing a good job, but we're not necessarily. Where's the risk there, Armando? I mean, okay, my critter gets sick, I don't make money off of it, but
that's correct.
That may be correct, but it could cost me a lot more than a sick critter, couldn't it?
That's correct. Yes. So good morning, everybody. Yes, Stan, you're correct. When we work with animals, there's always a high risk of getting infections out of these guys, or we even to them.
That's something we want to make sure we don't forget. Yep.
Yep. For example, mastitis, for those that have dairy farms, that people forget that one of the most common pathogens is the staph aureus, right. And the main reservoirs of the staph aureus is us. So we can definitely, if we are infected, and you are milking cows, you can definitely introduce that pathogen into your herd, and you know what mastitis do for production.
We make a point not to let anybody in the family that has the flu bug into the hog barn.
Exactly right. So we don't introduce influenza into the hog barns or into the poultry farms. So those are what we call reverse zoonoses.
Say that again.
Reverse zoonoses.
Reverse zoonoses.
Yes. These are infection diseases that we humans are the main reservoir, and we pass it along to the animals.
So we hear people screaming about bird flu and swine flu. Well, people flu is actually worse for them.
Oh, yes.
For those.
Yes. So we are major reservoir. But the concern here and the way that we wanted to talk today is to make people aware of the risk we have when we're working with certain circumstances or scenarios at the farm. So when we are working, for example, with a calf that has diarrhea, at that particular time, that animal is going to be shedding millions of microorganisms that are making that animal sick. But then you are being exposed to that, and you get that in your clothing, in your shoes, and then you bring them home.
So they're really contagious at that point.
They are.
And it's easy to pick that up and carry it back. And, hey, how about if your kid happens to get in the laundry basket?
Exactly right. Or the person that do the laundry. One of the things we normally have with the farmers is that when you make them aware of the risk, they know.
Right.
But if they normally argue to you that, well, I have immunity, I have been working with these for years and never getting sick, it's okay.
I wash up.
Exactly. Yeah. Probably you have the immunity because you have been exposed to the cabin or building, doing, you know, diarrhea, taking care of sick animals. But the people that surround you, your family members, probably they don't have this immunity and they are not in direct contact with that diarrhea cat. So that Salmonella, that E. coli, that Cryptosporidium, that Campylobacter, all those bad pathogens that we know are present there can go with you home.
Well, one of the things I think about is often the people that are most in contact with me as the immune farmer are kids.
Kids.
Grandparents. Yeah.
Grandparents and your own parents.
Right.
Right now, our houses have two or three generations sometimes living at the same time. So you will have your kids or probably your grandchilds, and then you will have your parents or your grandparents living with you. And they don't have the same exposure, so their immune system don't have either the memory or the speed to them to react to this type of pathogen. So we always talk in farming about biosecurity, what we can bring into the farm, what we are concerned, as you mentioned before, what we can bring to the pigs or to the poultry or to the cows, but we never think biosecurity in reverse, what we can bring home from the farm. And as I was mentioning to you before, we have seen in the last few years an increase in the numbers of children having salmonellosis, where almost 20% in the last 10 years of all the dairy cases in children, some of them are severe and they have died, have been associated with exposure at the farm. And it's not that these children were working with the animals. Okay, we're talking less than 5 years of age. These are children that were home, and their parents, that are the ones working with the animals, brought those pathogens into the house, the boots, the shoes, the clothing, They spots it in the carpet, the baby just walking around, crawling around, with their hands in their mouth. Voila, you connect right there at the red calf with your children to the level of the office. That was a big surprise to the citizens because they were looking into salmonellosis in children for the last 10 years, and they thought that the main source of salmonella is what?
Food.
Okay? Food or contaminated water, that was the main source. And they find out that around 18 to 20% of the children were really getting the salmonella out of their father.
Are you 15 to 20% of the...
18
to 20%. And are we talking only of the cases on farms or all cases?
No. Of all the cases of children in the last 10 years,
wow,
this particular study, where children that got exposed to salmonellosis from their parents that were people working on farms or they have some kind of agricultural connection. And then when they did some follow-up, how is that possible? Because
it's sure
supposed to be foodborne. How these children that got this from their parents is that the lack of biosecurity going back home. So they have a calf that is down, they will have the rear, they were trying to save the calf, probably they do, but then they go immediately home to have lunch. And they will not clean the cell because they have to go back immediately after that.
Yeah, don't change my shoes.
Exactly. And the problem, you're leaving that behind in the carpet. You're leaving that behind on the floors and maybe even in the bed.
Right.
So these are kind of things that are, that's the reason I'm here today, to make the people aware that this is happening. We need to be thinking. When we need to be thinking about that, when you have a cat with diarrhea, when you're dealing with a sick animal that has some kind of respiratory issue, when you are having the cats, the beer, that time is when you have a large concentration of microorganisms presence in the fluids, in the placenta, and all the fluids that have to do regarding the calves.
Okay, now I'm going to probably make you cringe, okay? The issue there is exposure to the stuff that the kid has not been exposed to before.
That's correct.
I've done some work on more of the produce side of things, looking at transfer of stuff, and one of my colleagues who is a food safety type person, and frankly a bit of a germaphobe if I do say so myself, she actually agrees with me that the solution to some of these cases is to have the kid eat more dirt. So, you know, okay. You know where I'm going is, okay, we need to be careful about getting that, but one of the things we have done, particularly with kids, has gotten so active with antibiotic soaps,
oh, yes,
all the kinds of things where we have, and there are studies that are coming out now that said we really have sanitized our environment so much that maybe it's too much at this point.
It is maybe too much, and that's correct. We have that discussion with our students and other professionals, is that we're going to the street. How many of you have gone to a supermarket recently and you see people getting the card?
You get
a Wipex Clorox just to clean the hand. Your immune system works by exposure. So you have to recognize that that is a pathogen and you create immunity towards that. If your immune system spends years without seeing it because you're wiping out your car at the supermarket, the day that you eventually get exposed, you're going to be severely ill.
Right.
That's what this colleague of you is making the point with children. So right now, we go to households in which they are basically sterilized. And then the problem is that the immune system of these children is not exposed whatsoever. And that doesn't mean that the pathogen has disappeared. E. coli is there, salmonella is there. And the first time that these children will get exposed to these pathogens is going to be probably bad. So the streams are bad.
Yeah.
It's not like you're going to be living in,
the pig pen.
Yes, the pig pen, thank you. Or you're going to be, disinfecting and sterilizing everything your kids touch. It has to be a balance between the two. You have to manage that. You have to let them play outside, get a little bit of dirt, that their immune system builds in over time.
Well, we've said that even in our livestock production environments, over time, in certain species and certain types of animals within the species, we've tried to reduce so much that then that animal can't perform in a different environment.
That's correct.
So it's the same concept there.
Yes.
Armando, I wanted to make sure that we did get to one of the things that certainly gets a lot of attention in the human side of things, and that is this whole issue of resistance to antibiotics and other types of medicines. You've got the same kinds of issues on the farm with the critters. How do we balance that? I had Andy Niehaus up here earlier, and we talked about, you know, yeah, we got to worry about residues, we got to worry about this, we got to worry about that, and now we've just talked about the eat dirt or not eat dirt concept. But, you know, how do we shoot for that balance? Because we need these drugs to take care of the bad problems. How do we balance this?
Yes, it's a very interesting question. We have a lot of discussion about antimicrobial resistance. I think everybody here has heard about that. The only concern I have, and I'm going to deviate a little bit of the question just to make a point, is it's kind of interesting to me from my perspective of veterinary public health that right now in the recent years have been a major push to make agriculture the scapegoat of antimicrobial resistance.
Yes.
So I agree with you, we need to use antibiotics, and we know that sometimes in some circumstances they have been abused in livestock production and all of that. But the truth is that the big issue for antimicrobial resistance in the human side is not exclusively an agricultural problem, and we are not necessarily the source for many of those drugs. And the example I use is, yes, agree, the increase of E. coli that is multidrug resistant have been emerging, Salmonella that is multidrug resistant have been emerging, but what about all these pathogens that produce respiratory problems in humans? They are not coming from the agricultural side, and they also have increased their antimicrobial resistance. What about sexually transmitted diseases? Have you seen the numbers recently? Most of the pathogens that are transmitted today sexually have also increased the multidrug resistance. Show me the connection with agriculture in regard to those particular pathogens. Urinary infections also have increased multidrug resistance. Tuberculosis have increased multidrug resistance. Skin infections.
Yeah.
Most of these pathogens, I can go on, and many of them have no connection to agriculture. However, when we're talking about antimicrobial resistance, we tend to focus only in what? Foodborne pathogens that are coming from agriculture, so agriculture and reduces.
Well, it's because we want to pass the buck, as we say, make it correct. Somebody else's fault. But I mean, the issue in the human side, regardless of the source,
yes,
the issues that we have to be worried about, resistance, are very much the same as they are on the critter side.
Oh, that's correct.
If I can't get rid of it with whichever antibiotic, I got a big problem. I have a friend who spent way too much time in the hospital last month because got an infection during a surgery, and they couldn't get the bug taken care of, and it wasn't MRSA. And, you know, it was one of these big deals. There were some resistance issues involved.
It is. Let me give you a very good example of how that connection with pharma and multidrug resistant pathogens happen. We know Staph aureus. Everybody probably have heard about Staphylococcus aureus, and one of them, a particular strain, methicillin-resistant Staph aureus, we call it MRSA for short, have become a major pathogen. How important is MRSA? If you go today to a hospital, a human hospital, and you get a hospital-acquired infection, it's very likely that it's going to be MRSA, because it's one of the top three in the U.S.
Right.
If you get a skin infection here in the U.S. right now, around 60% of those skin infections in the United States is going to be associated with MRSA, especially in children, which is kind of alarming. Where is the connection to the agricultural side? We know now that in some swine populations, deer, cat, turkeys, and other species, horses, there are some Staph aureus strains that they are circulating in those populations, and they have acquired the NK gene. That's the gene that provides resistance to all beta-lactam drugs. They're going to say, well, I don't care about beta-lactam drugs. Well, let me tell you, if you're cooking today and you cut tonight your finger with your knife as you're cooking and you get that cut infected, the most likely pathogen that is going to be there is going to be Staph aureus. And the most likely antibiotic that your physician is going to prescribe is a beta-lactam. What are the beta-lactams? Penicillin, ampicillin, amoxicillin, cephalosporin. Sounds familiar? Yes, because most likely we have used them more than once in our lifetime. MRSA have become resistant to all of them at once by only acquiring one gene. That's it. Only one gene that they share with the other. If I am MRSA and you are Staph aureus susceptible, I give you that gene. You automatically become resistant to the number one drug we use to attack. Isn't that amazing? The farm connection is this. these agricultural related staph aureus have acquired this metagen and have become methicillin resistant staph. And there was a very good study in which they show these baby that arrived at the hospital with an ear infection, very severe. It couldn't treat it, as you described. Right. No antibiotic was working. And they're trying to find out where that MRSA came in this child. And they asked the mother, and the mother at that time was lactating, and she had mastitis because of MRSA. So they take a sample from the mother, and a sample from the baby, and it happened to be exactly the same strain. So the question is, where the mother got it? Because she don't go to the farm, right. She just stay home mom. And it happens that the father is a swine farmer, and he spent most of the day at the farm.
Right.
So they go ahead and sample the father. He didn't have any clinical signs, but the father was colonized. They have it in the nose. So that strain, compared with the mother and the baby, exactly the same one. So the question is where the father got it. So they went to the farm and sampled the pigs. The pigs, perfectly healthy, you know, beautiful pink fat. They take a sample from the pigs, and the pigs have exactly the same strain all across.
So the pigs and the father were carriers, basically.
Exactly right. They were sharing with each other, and then eventually the father, as we were talking earlier today, lack of biosecurity from the personal point of view, brought the pathogen home, passed it along to the mom, and the mom passed it along to the baby. So the public health connection that you ask is just there. The question is, are we doing something in those swine farms that are increasing or helping to spread these pathogens? And we know that we think our biosecurity is very high, but we have a few years ago, and we still endemic with these porcine enteric virus that have been spread all across the show, that our biosecurity was not as great. We see the same thing with some of the pathogens, with these pathogens transmitted from animals to humans, that sometimes, especially when we're going back home, we bring them with us.
So, Armando, we're almost out of time, so I want to make sure that if anybody has a question or wants you to clarify something we talked about, we give them a chance. Any questions there? No. Anybody awake out there? A few people.
Let me ask you a question then.
Yeah.
How many of you have here, either yourself or a family member, that have acquired a staph infection or MRSA infection? Let me see hands.
Who's had a staph infection?
Yes, family member, neighbor, somebody close to you that had dealt with MRSA infection. Okay? Only a few. That's unique because normally agricultural-related people, okay, people like us that are associated with animals and the farms, we normally tend to have a higher colonization rate and a high infection rate like these type of pathogens.
I would bet you that if we did a test on this group of folks out here, we'd have a higher percentage of folks that have actually been exposed and are maybe that carrier who does not express.
Yes. We are right now running a very interesting study with veterinarians. So I work a lot with methicillin-resistant staph aureus. The average colonization rate in the United States is around 2%. So 2% of us, if you sample everybody here, it's going to be around 2%.
2% have staph.
MRSA.
MRSA, I'm sorry.
And staph is around 30%.
30%, okay.
So 1 in 3 have staph aureus, 2% have MRSA, the really bad one. What do you think is the prevalence for veterinarians that works directly with animals, clinicians? Definitely higher. So we are around 4 to 5%. For physicians and nurses that they work all the time with infected people, they're around 6%. So we are now looking to see the possibility to look into the farm side. We have not done it in the U.S., but they did it in Europe. And they went to Denmark and Norway and all those northern countries that they have a lot of swine production. Their MRSA prevalence in the general population is 0.001%. So basically, they don't have it. What do you think is the prevalence of MRSA in swine farmers? Give me a number. 2%. 3%. Remember, in their countries, there is no MRSA in the general population.
15%.
23%. So 1 in 5 swine farmers or swine workers have MRSA in the northern countries in Europe. How do you explain that? Nothing in the general population, but extremely high in the agricultural-related people. And it's because it's circulating in the animals, it's circulating in us, and then that's where the biopersonal biosecurity, as I call it, is not really working. And We have not done that type of study here in the U.S., so I don't know. So I will take stand that, and next year probably we can look into that and see what is our prevalence here, what is going on. But I can tell you, in our veterinarians here, it's around 4-something percent. The more work you have with animals, the higher is your likelihood of you being colonized. If you're a veterinarian, that you're more kind of office-oriented, small animals, your prevalence is lower.
All right.
So it's very interesting.
Yeah, and I'm not going to ask how you collect those samples with veterinarians, because I know we got a guy back there who collects them from hogs, and he runs around sticking things up their noses. Do you make Jeff do the same thing with veterinarians?
Yep.
Okay.
It's very easy. We give you a swab, and we say, go inside and rotate it in both sides as deep as you can, as long as you can hold it. And there are three things that happen. One third of the people will cry, and they cannot resist it.
Right.
Second third, they will sneeze on you, which is, imagine yourself, you're working with infection agents and people that probably is colonizing is sneezing on you. And the third one, they don't care, and they will give you more samples than you want ever to have.
There you go. Okay, with that, Armando Hoyt from the College of Vet Medicine, you're going to hang out over here in the tent a while, right?
Yes.
I keep got to remind folks they can go over to the Vet Med tent and visit. Are we transmitting a bug in there this year?
Yes, we are infecting people around. So if you go there, you're part of something we call Bukai fever. So we're going to infect you. And as more people you infect it, you increase your odds of getting one of the prizes that the college is offering today.
All right, so but don't worry.
Help us to transmit Bukai fever, please.
Okay, so go get your Buckeye fever, and Armando will be there for a while, and we're going to take